for. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am happy to welcome you all today to the first of our special guest lectures in our study of early and medieval Islamic religious history. I first met Saeed Alayla Abba when a former student, Bashar Al-Azadi, right there, who will be speaking in chapel on Friday. Just want to put a little plug in for that. When she told me that her mosque, the Lady Zainab, would welcome guests from Pacific Lutheran University. And she did not lie to us. We have been welcome there several times. We've been welcome there in a site dedicated to the memory and honor of a woman whose courage and wisdom proclaimed to the world the sacrifices of the members of the family of Ali. We have several times received a gracious welcome, a beautiful service of prayer and contemplation, delightful fellowship complete with two pieces of the best cake I have ever eaten, and the thoughtful and thought-provoking sermons of Hujjat ul-Islam Maulana. I am so delighted to welcome him here today and members of the Lady Zainab community. Maulana did his degree in religious studies and his master's degree in Arabic and Islamic sciences from Pakistan. He was invited to come to the United States in 1997 and has since traveled extensively as a well-respected lecturer and scholar of Shia Islam. He's been invited to deliver lectures in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Belgium, France, Italy, Liechtenstein, Austria, Switzerland, Germany, Australia, Canada, and Japan. So it is no surprise with that long list that he enjoys sightseeing. I was also surprised to learn that in addition to his scholarly pursuits, he enjoys a long list of activities including parasailing, skydiving, soccer, squash, field hockey, skiing, ice skating, water scooters, and cricket. After that, reading that list, I wanted to take a nap. I was tired of reading that list. At the conclusion of his presentation, you are welcome to ask questions until 10:30. After that, he needs to depart for another speaking engagement. We are all well aware some of you might need to leave a few minutes before that due to commitments, and we ask that you do so quietly so that we don't break our concentration. We also ask that you write your questions down on these note cards, and I will pass them along so that you all have one. I'll collect the note cards and bring them forward at the completion of his lecture. Please join me in welcoming him and all of the guests from Lady Zainab to our campus here today.
In the name of Allah, the Blessed, the Merciful, peace be on all the prophets of God, all the messengers of God, specifically Prophet Noah, Prophet Abraham, Prophet Moses, Prophet Jesus, and the seed of all prophets, Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon them and their families. We praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for all the blessings that He has bestowed upon us, and I would like to thank Honorable Professor Brenda for her kindness, her hospitality, and her beautiful words of introduction, and also pray that We're going to have more sessions, and she will be certainly visiting our center more often in the future, inshallah, God willing. Also, I'd like to thank all of you to be present in this presentation and allowing me to present and say my words to you. I pray that God blesses all of you and gives you more and more opportunities of goodness in your life. As you know already, that I belong to the Twelver Imami Shia Islam, and we believe in the 12 Imams after the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family. And that's the most significant thing that distinguishes us from other Muslims. The subject of my speech is Introduction to the Islamic Philosophy. I'll try to keep my words within 40 to 50 minutes of time frame. And also I have a very short PowerPoint presentation at the end. The life of a person is nothing but an ideology and a set of actions which are performed based on that ideology. The more the ideology is correct and strong, the stronger the ideology would be, the more positive the actions will follow. And the benefit of believing in a true religion is that the true religion ensures that we end up believing in logical beliefs based on concrete evidences, and the actions that we perform will guarantee an eternal success for the human. Keeping in mind that we human beings have a creator, and keeping in mind that we humans are composed of two basic components, a body, a physical body belonging to the world of matter, and a soul which belongs to the metaphysical world, which has nothing to do with matter. In Arabic we call it Alamut Tajarrud, that means the metaphysical world, which is actually the world of divine light. And believing in a religion ensures two things for a person. First of all, a spiritual success. As I just said, that a human is not only a physical body but a soul, so we do require a code of life that can guarantee success not only for our bodies but also for our souls. So the soul being the most important component, or more important component as compared to the body, cannot be ignored. So the benefit of the religion is that it provides spiritual success, and second of all, it provides eternal success. Because when a person ends up believing with evidences, with logical evidences that we do have a soul in our existence that belongs to the metaphysical world, then philosophically it is proven with the evidences that anything belonging to the metaphysical world never expires and never dies and is never destroyed. And things that belong to the physical world are always limited to time frames, to places. That means the factors of time and space will always limit and put its effects, apply its effects on that. So physical things, physical bodies are limited in nature, and they die away when the time expires. Whereas, and it gets decayed, and dies away. Whereas the metaphysical things are there to be forever, and they are infinite and eternal. So, soul being an eternal existence, when it's supposed to stay forever, a religion would be considered a true religion if it can guarantee eternal success as well. Because otherwise it will be ignoring the fact that the soul is eternal and providing laws that can secure our successes, our bodily successes, material successes in the life of this world in the physical sense only. Whereas after we die away from this world and the soul is still living, there's no agenda from that religion about that phase of life, which is undeniable in Islamic, in the philosophy. So, put it in more elaborate words, religion, summarizing what I have said up till now, is that religion provides the correct logical belief. That means it corrects the belief and makes sure it is logical. And it guarantees that a person who believes, ends up believing in that sort of correct belief, will perform actions that ensure his or her spiritual and eternal success. Also, because it has laws for the soul, more importantly, as compared to having laws for the body, the religion will also ensure spiritual cleansing, spiritual purification of the person. Nothing can move forward spiritually unless and until a person is spiritually purified, away from the sins, away from anything and everything that harms our spirituality. And it will provide tools, it will empower us to have tools and instruments and means in our control to build a relationship with the Creator who created such a soul. And it will also ensure that the believers of the religion will not end up violating the religion laws, its tenets, its principles, its values, so that every kind of evil, every kind of oppression, every kind of wrongs can be avoided in the society. Because the religion does not tolerate that the believers of the religion can perform any oppression, any evil, any injustice, or any mischief on the face of earth. It is very important to learn that worshipping a god as a general phenomena is what in Arabic we call it fitri. That means it is something which is found in the human instinct and nature. So when we say about anything that it is found in the human nature and instinct, what we are implying by that statement is that it's all inclusive. That means it is found in all the human beings, regardless of which land, which ethnic background, which time frame they were born, which country they were born in, when they were born. So all those things become meaningless because it's something found in the nature of a human and every human being of all ages, starting from the earliest ages till the latest of the generations before the day of judgment would happen, all the human beings will be sharing the same thing because we share the same fitrat, we share the same instinct because we are human beings. So, worshipping a god is found in the human nature, and that's the reason you would find people worshipping various things, whether they end up worshipping the real god or they end up worshipping something which is not the real god, but they thought is the real god, so they worshipped. People worship moon and the stars, people worship sun, people worship idols, people worship humans. There were people who worship animals. People worship God. Even those of the people who say that we don't believe in God, and they assign the similar attributes that the believers in God assign to God, they assign the similar attributes to the nature. They call it Mother Nature. Well, we are not here to argue with people about the name that they assign to God. We can assign whatever name. That's still acceptable. You can call him Mother Nature, you can call him God, we can call him Allah in Arabic, you can call him whatever. But basically, all this pattern of behavior of the humankind over the passage of generations proves when something is found over and over again over the passage of centuries without a difference, it is one of the clear signs that it is found in the instinct and nature of the human, and it is natural to believe in a god. Just like those people who say, well, we don't believe in any religion. This statement is quite similar to the ones who say that we don't believe in any god. Because just like I explained, even if they call it Mother Nature, that's supreme power. Whatever they call it, Mother Nature or whatever other name, is what we call God. So people who say we don't believe in religion, this is their religion. Isn't that right? So they say we don't believe in any religion, but of course they are practically speaking, they are following certain rules and principles for their life. Whatever they feel like doing it, whatever they wish to do, their own desires, they decide on their own, fine. But whatever they decide to do, whatever set of laws that they follow for leading a life and their lifestyle, that's their religion. That's what religion is. Religion is a way of life. So everybody has a religion. Now, whether somebody is following a religion which is correct, or some people are following a religion which is not correct, that's a different story. But basically, everybody is following a way of life. So believing in a correct religion ensures the correct beliefs and correct and positive actions. And believing in an incorrect religion will certainly provide us with an incorrect belief system, and the actions anyway can never be separated from the belief of a human being, because we do what we believe, and what we believe, what we do. So, and philosophy, we say that the belief of a person is inseparable from his actions or her actions, and likewise the actions are inseparable from the beliefs. Yeah, maybe sometimes a person ends up claiming that I believe something, but his actions don't certify what he or she claims. So whatever he or she is doing is actually the real belief that he believes. Now coming to the next point of our of the presentation is benefits of the religion. The religion, the true religion, provides answers to three questions for the human beings. And those three questions are as follows. What is my origin? That means, where did I come from? What's my destination? That means, where am I heading to? And what's the goal? Why in the world I am here? Why in the world my creator, whatever Mother Nature, supreme power, extraordinary power, God, Allah, whatever you may call that, you know, even if it's a Big Bang, well, there is something, there has to be a cause for the Big Bang as well. Nothing, no effect can happen without a cause. Isn't that right? That's pure logic. So a cause, you know, is required for an effect. An effect can never happen without a cause. It's not a rocket science. So every effect has a cause. So whatever was the cause of that Big Bang, that same cause is what we call God. So what is the goal? Why am I created by that original cause or God? So these are the three questions that need to be answered. Just like imagine a person gets unconscious in an accident and he's taken to an intensive care unit in a hospital. When he wakes up, he asks the question, where am I? Isn't that right? That's very natural, because he was not here. Moments ago, he was not here. Few minutes ago, he was somewhere else. So it's very natural for a person who ends up coming to a different place to ask, where am I? Who brought me here? Why am I here? Isn't that right? These are very natural questions. So when we human beings have a mind and intellect, which is one of the biggest blessings of God, when we are sent, we are born, we are created, we are brought into this new place, we have a right to ask these three questions. What is my origin? Where did I come from? And what's my destiny? Where am I going to? And what's the goal and purpose of whosoever created me and brought me here? Why in the world he brought me here? Why not somewhere else? There has to be answers for these three questions. And because it shouldn't be, I mean, we can't be like, to me, if somebody says, well, it's without a cause, it's simply illogical and silly to believe that an effect can happen without a cause. It would be just like if somebody would say to me, you know, we have the best of the encyclopedias in the world, like the Encyclopedia Britannica, in whatever volumes, 50 volumes or 100 volumes. If somebody comes up and says to me, you know what, Encyclopedia Britannica, all of a sudden an earthquake happened in Indonesia and somewhere in the Pacific Rim, and because of that such and such earthquake, all of a sudden we find 100 volumes of Encyclopedia Britannica were formed. Can anybody believe in that? Well, an earthquake happening in some part or some corner of the world, how can it compile and write such a articulate book of facts and information that requires a thought process and thinking and mind and intellect and reasoning behind it and research behind it and so much details and micro details of things in it? It doesn't make sense. So if somebody says that all these this world, this universe around us is just like papers of encyclopedia, just like unorganized things in a haphazard way just happen all of a sudden, it doesn't make any sense, because all the things around us are perfectly in sync, harmonious with each other, compatible with each other. And it is, everything in the universe is in its own place where it deserves to be. The only problem is done by some of the bad people of our kind, the humankind, some bad people who are doing the wrong stuff. So some of the bad humans are the odd creatures in the entire universe Otherwise, you look at everything else around us, you find the whole universe is perfectly in place and harmonious and in sync with each other. So the scientists say, and the ecologists say, that everything in this ecosystem is tied to everything else, which is another evidence of being God, a God being there, creating everything in its own place. Just like there has to be a writer, a mindful, intelligent research scholar or a team of scholars writing Encyclopedia Britannica. It cannot come out of an earthquake in Indonesia or somewhere else. Similarly, the ecosystem is in the ecosystem. We find everything is tied to everything else. So we find the problems of on land turn to be the problems on in the air and at sea. And sometimes the solutions we human beings try to provide become the problems. For example, the ecologists say that if you try to irrigate sufficiently to turn the deserts into farmlands in South America or the American West, and the same watered and newly rich soil can be salinized and become useless in two generations. Example number two, you turn to fish farming in Iceland because ocean farming grounds are exhausted, and you can put more additional strain on the arable land because the farm fish eat food made out of grain. So that's what I was talking to you, that our solutions become the problems. Example number three, you try to build high stacks to clear the industrial smoke coming from the Ohio River Valley, and you would be dumping deadly acid rain on Quebec's sugar maples. So everything in this world is tied up with everything else. Yes, it is possible that we human beings sometimes do not understand the wisdoms. That's again a different thing. In a lot of cases we don't understand because we don't know a lot of things. 80% of the living organisms live inside water, the scientists say. We don't even know everything about our own planet. So what we know is only part of what exists. Our wisdoms are so limited that if we end up claiming that we know nothing, it would not be incorrect, because what we know is so less as compared to what we don't, that's almost nothing. So when this is the extent of the human knowledge, then how come we can deny something just because we apparently fail to understand the wisdom behind certain things happening around us? Just because we fail to understand the wisdoms, how can we deny a system and a well-organized system behind what is taking place? So human activity is actually wounding the Earth's ecosystem and extinguishing its creatures. Global warming, we all know about that, the ozone depletion, the desertification of once the arable land. And so you find the scientists say that we go to the parks, we find the small lakes in the parks, they have ducks, Canadian goose flying and coming, passing by, and it is said that you don't feed the ducks, isn't that right? You find the signs written there, almost in all those places. Feeding the ducks will cause overpopulation and encourage the migrant birds to interrupt their natural pattern. Also, it will cause the population of the birds to get increased, and the chance of for the birds to contract diseases and parasites just because we humans start feeding the ducks.
That's what I said. Some of the humans are the ones who are the odd ones in the entire ecosystem and universe that God created with His own wisdoms. And likewise, the bird droppings will increase if you start feeding the ducks in a lake, causing insanitations and add nutrients to the lake, which increases algae from the algae growth, causing the lake decay and the fish death, just because the humans have started to feed the ducks. And more bird population also causes them to eat more grass, which is the grass which is needed for the ground cover and for the erosion control. So again, feeding the ducks can cause so many problems. This is a little thing that we humans do and can end up doing a lot of harm to the ecosystem. So God created the universe with the absolute wisdom and knowledge that He has, because He's God. If His knowledge was less incomplete, or wisdom was incomplete, then He would not be God. He would be just like one of us, human beings. Our knowledge is not complete and our wisdom is not perfect. So you don't need to provide a sweater to the polar bear, or a pressurized space suit to a Canadian goose, or a shawl to an Arabian camel in the desert, or a diving suit to a sea otter, or a Gore-Tex waterproof breathable clothing to an Antarctic penguin, because God Himself provided what these animals needed for their survival. So we don't need to worry about those things. And we don't need to provide an oxygen mask for an ant before it enters into its hole deep down into the earth. Isn't that right? So everything in the universe has been there with its own systems that Allah, that God has thought, and that God had and created things according to that. It is very logical to believe in the teachings of the Creator. Just like if you buy a Sony television from the market, you find the manufacturer has provided a brochure with the TV, isn't that right? And it talks about all the do's and do nots, how you have to behave with the television, with the product, because the manufacturer knows the product best. Similarly, God has sent down the books through His messengers. You know, a book was given to Prophet Noah, a book was given to Prophet Abraham, a book, Torah, was given to Prophet Moses, may peace be upon him, and Bible was given to Prophet Jesus, may peace be upon him, and likewise, Quran was given to the final Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his family. So this is the instruction manual that God, the Creator, has sent for the guidance of the human in terms of his spirituality and body to ensure their spiritual and eternal success. Yes, there are certain hardships. But every law has certain hardships. I want to drive to downtown from my home and I'm driving alone, so I can't take the carpool lane. I have to get stuck in the traffic. It's a hardship, but I have to obey the law, isn't that right? Just because a little bit of hardship, because of the law, every law may have some hardships in following. But because we are humans, we are not like animals and beasts who follow, obey no laws, you know. Because my goat can go to the next door neighbor's lawn and start eating the grass because he has no idea that trespassing into somebody's property is not right. And usurping and using somebody's property without his or her own, his or her permission of the owner is not right. But the goat can't understand these things because it's an animal. So because we are humans, we understand certain principles and its values, and we value those values, being humans.
So naturally, obeying certain laws will have its own hardships. So we can't just turn away a law, turn down a law because of some of the hardships
that being a human, we will have to face in the process of obeying the law. But otherwise, the teachings of the religion are all logical and wise. Although it's always good when you talk to anybody of any faith, that you talk about his beliefs instead of talking about the practical laws of his or her religion. Because beliefs are supposed to be founded on logical evidences. Now the practical laws are also logical and based on wisdoms, but not necessarily the wisdoms of every law is in sync with the level of my wisdom. Maybe I belong to a lower level of knowledge, which I do belong, and maybe I as a human being belong to a low level of wisdom, which I do belong. So the wisdoms behind the laws of the creator of intellect can never be against the intellect, because he's the creator of intellect and the creator of everything. Because it's illogical that the creator of intellect would make a law and legislate a law which is against the intellect. Yeah, I may understand certain wisdoms and I may not understand certain others. So what if I don't understand as a believer in the creator who is all wise because he's the creator? We can't say, you know, an earthquake composed the Encyclopedia Britannica.
So we can't say this wise universe and where everything is in its own place, rightfully placed, has a creator who is unwise and illiterate and illogical.
That doesn't make any sense. So once it is proven that the creator has to be logical and all wise and all knowing, then whatever laws he would provide are always logical and wise. Sometimes we may understand the wisdom, sometimes we may not understand, unless and until we elevate our levels of intellect to higher levels so that we can comprehend. But that doesn't mean that the laws don't have the wisdom. It's just because I don't understand at this stage of my intellect and wisdom.
God, being the creator of us, has obliged us to do things which are beneficial for us, because he has no goal to pursue. Why in the world do we do things? We human beings, when we perform certain things, we achieve certain goals, we are running after certain milestones, certain goals in our life, because we need to get perfected. By achieving certain goals, we need to reach certain destinations and perfect ourselves and reach certain successes. Without achieving those goals, we will not be successful and we will not be perfect. If somebody has all the successes and all the perfections already, that somebody would not bother to run after achieving any goal, because he or she already has what he wanted to pursue. Isn't that right? So God, being all wise, having everything and all perfections already, doesn't need to pursue and do anything for the sake of pursuing some goals, some certain benefits that he wants to get out of it. He doesn't need no benefit. So everything that he legislates is because of the love that he has for his creatures. So the benefits turn back to us, the creatures. We get the benefits if we tell the truth and abstain from lying. We get the benefits if we take their trust, we take care of the trusts of the people and don't betray the people. We get the benefits if we don't backbite. We get the benefits if we are faithful and we don't cheat and we don't deceive the people. We get the benefit if we are chaste in our morality and character and protect our spirituality. So whatever nice teachings that are serving our spirituality, if we obey those teachings, we are getting the benefits. If we don't obey, we are missing out on those benefits. It's not that God is getting any benefit if we obey Him or we disobey Him, because He's perfect. Perfects don't achieve any goals. Imperfects achieve goals, you know, in philosophy, for getting successful and perfect. Will Durant had said once that without the religion, the sense of, which I'm paraphrasing in my own words, the sense of obligation will be gone. The human being will no longer feel obliged to do things. And he was right in what he said. Just imagine, in order to understand what Will Durant has said about the religion, let's suppose we are driving on a freeway with a 60 mile per hour limit. Well, in some countries, you go in Germany, in the autobahns, there is no limit in some countries. So it's really good to drive in those. I like it because, but it has its own harms as well. But in the US, we have a 60 mile per hour limit, so we have to follow the law. We must respect the law. So if you are driving on a freeway, and you can see there are some people who are driving fast, 70, 75. Some people are really driving crazy, you know, outrageous speeds. As soon as a cop shows up, what happens? You find everybody coming back to 60, as if they were never driven on 75 in their life. And so innocent. Isn't that right? Because now the enforcer of the law is there to check you. So unless and until there's an enforcer of the law to check, there will always be people who will not follow the law. Again, that's logical. So, why some people start disobeying a law? Because when they find they can run away with it, they will not be caught. They can escape. So they don't feel obliged any longer. But what Will Durant said, the religion, if religion was not there, people will not feel obliged. He was so right, because if you believe in a religion, and the religion, your religion says you have to follow 60 miles per hour limit, then you will continue to obey the 60 miles per hour limit, even though there is no cop available, because you will consider yourself accountable in front of your Creator, who is still watching, even though if a cop is not watching. Isn't that right? So religion is the one, is the only power which can stop all the human beings. If they stop obeying the religion, it will stop all the human beings from violating the limits. All the limits, not just the speed limit, all the limits in their life. It empowers us to build our relationship with God. That's what we call worshipping God. Worshipping is nothing but a relationship. So we do things to please our Creator, to get closeness, to get His pleasure, to get successes in our life and in the life in the hereafter. And also the religion provides us with how to deal with our fellow human beings. And not just the human beings, fellow creatures. How to treat animals, how to treat birds and fishes and plantations. Everybody's rights must be protected and honored. So Quran says, the Holy Quran says, إِن مِّن شَيْءٍ إِلَّا يُسَبِّحُ بِحَمْدِهِ وَلَكِنْ لَا تَفْقَهُونَ تَسْبِيحَهُمْ. In the light of this verse, we understand that every single thing is doing is glorifying the praise of His Lord, but you guys don't understand their glorification. So we should, we human beings must understand that just because we don't realize this plant or that animal or this fish or this bird is glorifying God, we can't say that we are the only ones who are alive. Because some people think that plants are not alive because they don't have souls. So it's this not the way of dealing with the creatures around us. Every creature is busy. The Quran informs us that it is doing the glorifying the praise of God. So we believe that every creature is living, the level and stage of life is different for every creature. So we need to respect all the creatures, not just the human beings, but all the creatures around us, and not transgress the limits to do any violations towards them. The next point is about the fact that why do we need the spiritual teachings? Because the soul belongs to the world of divine light, the metaphysical world, and the soul cannot get peace and satisfaction through money. Lots of rich people can't sleep comfortably in the night because money can never buy you peace. Happiness and sorrow, the philosophy teaches us, are attributes of the soul, not the body. If you ask somebody who is happy, "Can I see the happiness, please?" Can he or she show you the happiness? No. They can show you some signs of happiness when the guy is smiling, you can see his teeth and all that. These are signs. That's not the reality itself. What's the reality of happiness? Where is that? That is not seeable, because the reality of happiness and sorrow is something which is found in the soul. You are happy when your soul becomes happy and the sign appears on your body. And you are sorrowful when your soul becomes sorrowful and the signs appear in your body. You may end up crying with tears. So the body shows the signs. It's not the home of the attributes of happiness and sorrow. Happiness and sorrow are attributes which are found nowhere except in the soul. So the soul can only find happiness if you treat the soul with things that belong to its hometown. Soul does not belong to the world of matter, whereas money belongs to the world of matter. So money can never provide happiness for the soul. It can always provide happiness for your body. So you can find best of the mattresses and, you know, a memory mattress to relax your bodies. That makes sense. The body will relax, but whether you will be happy, that the answer to the question lies in the fact if your soul is happy. If you're still disturbed and under stress and depressions, then the memory foam or mattress cannot do much to relieve you from the pain. As long as the soul is in pain. Isn't that right? So, we need teachings from the unseeable world of divine light. Soul is the light of God. It's a divine light. It's a non-material, metaphysical entity. So require teachings from the world of metaphysical realities to be brought to us so that our souls can find peace and success. As simple as that. And that's what the job of the messengers is. That's what the messengers do exactly. They bring teachings from God, from that world where we human beings, being imperfect, are unable to bring and have access to that world. They bring teachings for us on behalf of God and in the form of books, and they, the prophets and messengers themselves, follow as role models. The best lead by example, so they lead by example, and that's how we are supposed to follow to elevate our spiritualities. The religion requires us not to follow any religion which is, any belief which is illogical, or beliefs that are based on ancestral customs and traditions, which may be right or may not be right. The belief in religion will correct your ideology, so it will get you rid of the incorrect ancestral traditions, if any, incorrect customs that some people are maybe following, because traditions and customs may be logical, may not be logical. And anything which is not logical should not be believed in. And finally, before I come to the close to the end of my speech, all prophets of God brought the same message, we believe. Prophet Adam, starting from Prophet Adam, Prophet Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, peace be upon all of them and their families. They brought the same message. It's impossible for one source to provide multiple agendas. Again, that doesn't make any sense to believe. And one source of all the prophets, from where they are all coming, from that one source, God, providing multiple agendas for the humans. Why the multiple agenda? You know, it doesn't make any sense. So it has to be single agenda. And that's why we believe that all the prophets brought one same message. The message was lost because of the desires and wishes and whims of some human beings and the pleasures of some human beings who didn't want to give up their pleasures of this world. So they disobeyed the messages, the message of all the prophets of God. But basically the message was one single message. Well, there may be some minor differences in the code of law that we call Sharia, which makes sense because the human beings are, you know, evolving in different situations that we are facing in our life from time to time. So some minor details of the law may be different depending on the need of the time, but the mainstream teaching was the same. So you can find all those portraits. I don't know how many of you have been to Italy. If you go to Italy, you can find all those sculptures of Michelangelo and beautiful paintings. And in so many of the churches, you find paintings of Virgin Mary. I saw myself. In almost all of those paintings, I found her head was covered. Isn't that right? So, which is similar to what we call hijab in our religion. Some human beings throughout the centuries, generally speaking, obeyed the divine law and some did not. Some ended up doing good behaviors, some ended up doing bad behaviors. They're good and bad in every society. And no two humans are the same. Even the real identical twins are not exactly the same. So there are good and bad in every society. You can never generalize. And there are some good and some bad. There are some evil. And the evil need to be condemned. And everybody need to disassociate from the evil. Because that's not from the religion. That's the personal bad behavior of whomsoever is doing an evil. It would be assigned to religion if the religion was asking them to do that. No religion can ask if it's a religion to do an evil. And that's why an evil act has no justification and it has to be condemned. So every aggression, every terrorism, every evil has to be condemned because there's no room and there's no justification for anybody, any human belonging to any religion doing any evil against any other human of any other religion. If there's a Muslim or a Jew or a Hindu or a Sikh or a Christian or a Buddhist doing evil act against another Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or a Buddhist or a Hindu, there's no justification for any of those actions done by anybody. I said on that night when Professor Brenda blessed us with her presence with her students in our Zenith Center, I said in that night to them that just like, you know, we all condemn the Oklahoma bomber, and just because the Oklahoma bomber was a Christian, that doesn't give me the license to say all the Oklahoma citizens are bad. That would be, again, illogical. Or all the Christians are bad because he was a Christian. That, again, would be illogical to say that, if somebody says that. Or because Hitler was a Christian, 60 million human beings were killed and due to the Second World War, according to the history. So just because he was a Christian, I cannot start condemning Christianity and all the followers of that religion just because one evil guy did an evil act. That is wrong to deal with any religion like that. Or, you know, so basically, whenever you find any act of evil, it has nothing to do with the religion. That has to be condemned by everybody equally, and the religion always condemns it. Yeah, maybe some people use the name of the religion, but that's some people use so many other excuses. So what? You know, we cannot target one religion or one country. The Virginia Tech bomber was a Korean guy, so we cannot say all the Koreans are bad. Well, that's not the way you deal with the issue, you know. So let's, the problem here about Islam is that what they say that all the terrorists are Muslims. Isn't that right? That's what the media says. So let's go to this report from the European Union poll that says that all the terrorists are Muslims except the 99.6% that are.
I'm going to see if I can get the lights down just a little bit.
Please.
Here.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Please forgive me. Is that good?
Yeah. Can you read that?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So this is a report from Europol, releases an annual study of terrorism. The results do not support claims that all the Muslims are terrorists. So you can find that it says that all terrorists are Muslims, except the 99.6% that aren't. So is that really the right way of putting the news? But the media does what it has to do. So you see in the detail of the reports here, it says the member states and the European Union and different kinds of terrorism acts conducted in 2006, the Islamists, the separatists, the left wing, the right wing, and other are not specified, and this is the total. So you find in front of the countries, you can find the number of Muslims or Islamists, one only in 2006 in Germany, and one is the total. And separatists, 283 in France, 136 in Spain, 4 in the UK, 25 in Greece, and left wing, and so on and so forth. So you can see the total number is 498 versus one person in 2006. Unlike what the media would always present because they have their own agendas. And for 2007, you find in the European poll report, it says, number of failed, foiled, and successfully executed attacks in 2007 per member state and affiliation. So here you find the total number for the Muslims is 4, and separatists is 532, left wing is 21, and 1 and 1, and then not specified is 24, and total is 583. So 583 versus 4. So the media is not going to talk as much about this 532 or 21 or 24 as much as it was talked against Islam, unfortunately, because of certain reasons, political agendas. Also, this is about European Union, the other side of the Atlantic. Let's come back to America. So here in America, they say that's the CNN recently published an article entitled "Study: Threat of Muslim American Terrorism in U.S." And there it says all terrorists are Muslim except the 94% that aren't. So here you can find in this chart
that it says terrorist attacks on the U.S. soil by group from 1980 to 2005, according to the FBI database. 6% is Islamic extremists, 7% are the Jewish extremists, and extreme left-wing groups 24%, others 16%, and Latino 42%, and communists is 5%. So, but the way it is portrayed is totally different, and unfortunately that needs to be, we disagree with the way it is portrayed. Now let's move forward to this short video clip before the end of the speech. What happened? Stop it so that you don't miss on any word.
That issue that set off a national debate. The former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin jumping in on the debate now over a new mosque. Critics have attacked plans to build a mosque at the site of the terror attacks that killed thousands of Americans, calling it hallowed ground and saying it is just too sensitive a location.
They're going to build a mosque at Ground Zero? We haven't even rebuilt a building at Ground Zero. Now they're going to build a mosque on that hallowed ground? Or is it not exactly hallowed ground?
This is 45 Park Place in Lower Manhattan. It used to be the Burlington Coat Factory.
Okay, actually, I think that's a couple of blocks away from Ground Zero. And it's not technically a mosque, it's an Islamic cultural center. So, for its critics, what location would be acceptable?
A half mile away.
Move it several blocks away.
Put it 5 blocks away or 10 blocks away. A 15 block radius, 20 blocks away.
Here is the first response about this location.
Do you know what it is you're standing in front of right now? You're down near Ground Zero.
No, it says Masjid. Is that a Jewish magic shop?
Masjid is a mosque. It's a mosque.
Wait, that's a mosque?
Yes, that's right.
But we're 4 blocks from Ground Zero.
Yes, I know. That mosque actually is in the neighborhood I live in. It's been there for 40 years. It predates the World Trade Center.
Oh. Holy crap, John! 2 mosques near Ground Zero? That's how they're going to take over. They're going to build a mosque every 2 blocks until the city is completely gone.
I think you're thinking of Starbucks.
Man, thank God those people got here first.
All right.
Now, the second response about this location.
But why not a quarter mile? Why not an eighth of a mile? Who gets to decide exactly what the mileage difference is? The reality is there already is a mosque at that same location right now where hundreds of people are going to... No, at that same location. There is another one 2 blocks away from that one. Why put another one there? It already is there. It's just a question of rebuilding the same structure. I think what's going on in this issue is being used as a fear-mongering campaign.
This fear-mongering against Islam has incited widespread religious intolerance and hate crimes.
May 10th, Jacksonville, Florida. A pipe bomb at the Islamic Center of Northeast Florida. The bomb went off during evening prayers, and it was powerful enough to send shrapnel flying 100 yards. Fortunately, the bomber didn't know where to place it, so the 60 Muslim worshippers were uninjured.
In Brooklyn, just a couple of months ago, there was a Bangladeshi man, and he was approached by three teens, and they asked him, "Are you Muslim?" And he said, "Yes." And they said, "Go back to your bleeping country." Then they attacked him, and the man was in a coma. And now these are teens that cannot be prosecuted as adults.
21-year-old Michael Enright got into a New York City taxi last night, asked the driver if he was Muslim, got an affirmative answer, and then allegedly slashed the driver across the neck, face, and shoulders. Michael Enright was today arraigned on charges of attempted murder, too, as a hate crime.
Let's take a look at some of the biased reporting that is fueling this intolerance and hatred.
There's growing outrage over plans to build more mosques and Islamic centers in America. You've probably heard about a lot of the stories. But in New York City, tempers are really flaring over a proposal to sell a Catholic convent to a Muslim group. And now in rural Tennessee, a plan to build a mosque has sparked vandalism, even death threats.
And of course, the mosque at Ground Zero. Well, according to one monitoring agency, they said, yes, there's an uptick in the number of mosques that are being built. And of course, accordingly, there are a number of people asking, why are these mosques being built in my community?
I think I know the other one. Because there are Muslims who live in your community. and I guess they can't find the prayer carpet room in the church or synagogue.
Now let's hear the Islamophobes explain how religious prejudice is not the reason they oppose these mosques.
Is it because of the location, Lauren, or the fact that they're being built at all?
I think there's a question about why are these mosques being built.
There are some people that are afraid, and they're afraid for good reason, because Islamic philosophy and ideology starts in a mosque.
Mass is one of several major Islamist groups in the United States that claim to be moderate, and their mission is to spread Islam to be dominant in the United States.
What? One of the tenets of Islam is to spread Islam? That would be like if Christians went places.
Nations, repeated to all the world, and preach the gospel to every creature. And he sent them out to preach the kingdom of God. He commanded us to preach to the people.
But wait! Muslims don't just want to spread their religion. They make the law of the land.
This is in this book. This is the imam that is spearheading the effort to build the mosque. These are his words. He's the one that has argued that Sharia law could be used in the U.S. because they can have their own courts and religious leaders.
Okay, let's stop here for a minute. So the issue is allowing Muslims in the U.S. to arbitrate civil matters internally. Islamic arbitration courts already operate in the U.K., as have Jewish courts for centuries. As with any arbitration, participation is voluntary, and especially nothing is being imposed on unwilling non-Muslims.
That he would want to impose, or at least allow for Muslims to have the ability to transcend the American court system.
Oh, yes. See, the thing about Sharia is, the difference is that no other religious system makes rules for people who are outside the religion. But Islamic law does. What? So I guess in your town I can go buy booze on a Sunday to bring to Adam and Steve's wedding reception?
Islamic arbitration is voluntary, but Christian countries and Israel already impose their religious beliefs on others. by prohibiting certain activities, such as gay marriage, and buying alcohol and shop timings on Sundays or the Sabbath.
Still, if the new principle is that no one should have to live by the rules of someone else's religion, I know some people are going to be very disappointed.
Going back to what our founders and our founding documents meant, they're quite clear that we would create law based on the God of the Bible and the Ten Commandments.
We believe in a constitution that's based on those Judeo-Christian ethics.
Most of our laws actually have flowed from the Old Testament.
Aren't all our laws really based on the Ten Commandments? I know this is God's constitution.
So the hypocrites attacking Islamic arbitration courts love the fact that the U.S. Constitution is based on the Bible.
Wait a minute! Now I know why you don't want mosques popping up all over the place. Competition? Damn free market!
And now, for the final word about this question.
We want to know what you think. Should Muslims be allowed to build their mosques in the neighborhoods of their choosing?
Coming up next, should Puerto Ricans be allowed to lower your property value? Should they be allowed to vote? Ryan Sawyer, ABC News.
Final slide, which I don't know if you are able to okay, but we'll go back to. The final slide before I end the speech is that's my message to all of you, respectable audience. Islamic message is a message of love and justice and peace. We have to distance ourselves from every evil, oppression, and terrorism, aggression, whether done by a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Sikh or anyone else, because terrorism and oppression has no justification whatsoever. We need to elevate our spiritualities by obeying and serving the Creator. So abstain, we should abstain from things that are harmful to our soul. That's the way we abstain from things that are harmful to our body. And we should not oppress anybody, and don't let anyone else to oppress us. We need to stand for justice and peace in all situations in our life. And last message is for those of you, if there's any Muslim present in this gathering, can you please raise your hand? Okay, so my message to you as a Muslim is that you have to live with mutual respect towards your fellow human beings. Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Sikhs, everyone else around us in the society, we are obliged to respect everybody, every human being, and all of our neighbors, and live with mutual respect towards them, and with love and peace and morals. Again, I feel obliged to thank Professor Brenda for her kind invitation, giving me this opportunity, and thank all of you to be here. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you very much for a message that was both philosophical and ecumenical at the same time. If you would like to write down a question, there's just a few minutes that he can answer a few questions. And while you're taking the time to write that down, I'd like to say, right behind you, I need to grab something here. I have a student who went to your mosque last year, and she works for a group called the Daughters of Norway. It's very Lutheran. And they do embroidery. And she has made for you, on behalf of her class, an embroidery of Luther's rose for you. Now, that seems like kind of an odd thing to give, but I'd like to read you Luther's explanation of the symbols of the rose. And you can just imagine the rose as I'm describing it in Luther's own words. The cross that's in the center of the heart reminds us that faith, saves us, for one who believes from the heart will be justified. Luther writes, it leaves the heart in its natural color. It does not corrupt nature. Faith does not kill, but faith keeps us alive. Such a heart should stand in the middle of a white rose to show that faith gives joy, comfort, and peace. In other words, it places the believer into a white, joyous rose. For this faith does not give peace and joy like the world gives. That is why the rose should be white and not red, for white is the color of the spirits and the angels. Such a rose should stand in a sky blue field, symbolizing that such joy and spirit and faith is the beginning of heavenly future joy, which is already beginning but grasped in hope not yet revealed. Around this field is a golden ring, symbolizing that such blessedness in heaven lasts forever and has no end. Such blessedness is exquisite beyond all joy and goods, just as gold is the most valuable, most precious, and best metal. This is my compendium theologiae, or theological summary. I have wanted it to show it to you, he adds, in good friendship, hoping for your appreciation.
Thank you
very much for your time. Did anybody write down a question that they would like? I'll collect them now. I'll go this way. Please pass that down. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Professor, for the beautiful gift that you have given. I really appreciate that. The first question is that, do you find God and science to be one entity or thing? Do you find scientific theory to be proof of rather than the opposite? Okay. Yeah. Science is something which is completely supported. I mean, I'm talking from the Islamic perspective. It's completely supported by Islam. And you can find significant services by Muslim scientists, in the passage of centuries. And specifically in the time before the Renaissance in Europe. So science is supported by Islam. And all the scientific researches and advancements are encouraged in Islam. The only thing to keep in mind is that scientific discoveries are usually based on experiments. And sometimes there are certain things which we discover after a while ago exactly opposite to what we discovered back a few years back. So, because it was based on experiences, so and there is still a room of changes and alterations in our decisions. So science needs to be supported, and it should be encouraged and should be promoted by keeping in mind that our discoveries is not like a mark on the stone. It is based on experiences in most of the cases, and certain things can be altered because of our advanced researches taking place. Whereas the teachings of religion are like a mark on the stone, because they come from God always, and those are the final words. So there is a slight difference, yes, between God and science. It's not one and the same thing. There is a difference. And of course, God being the creator, and science is a knowledge which is based on how we discover and experience. Sometimes people will use the phrase, I'm spiritual, not religious. How would this type of individual fit into Islam? In other words, can a good Muslim ignore the religious community? I'm spiritual, not religious. My question would be to this person that spirituality can never come from anywhere else other than a religion. There has to be a religion telling you how to be spiritual and how to protect your spirituality. Like I said in the presentation, that it's God who teaches us teachings from the world, or the metaphysical world, which is the hometown of the soul. So all those teachings coming from that world in the religion through the messengers of God are the spiritual / religious teachings. So it's actually one and the same thing. Spiritual and religious teachings are not different from each other. So every single teaching of the religion has something to do with our spirituality. Even those of the teachings which seems to be related to our body, but still has a connection to the soul. Body is nothing but a tool, just like a hammer is used by a person who is nailing nails into the wood, a carpenter. So he's using different types of tools. This is a body that me and you, we are using, our souls are using for different tasks. And as soon as the soul departs the body, you find the same body is there where we can do nothing. The eyeballs don't die straight away, but the person can't see when he dies. Isn't that right? The ears and eardrums and all those things are still there, but we can't hear. The tongue, this 3-inch flesh inside the mouth, is still there, but we can't move and can't speak and can't communicate with each other after the soul can pass the body. So this tongue and this ear and this eye, these eyes and these hands were just the tools that was being used by our souls to do certain tasks. As soon as the soul is gone, the tool is there, is now useless. So spirituality comes from the religion and nowhere else but the religion. So being spiritual is actually being religious, and being religious actually is being spiritual in the real sense. How can I get the internet address for this? Okay, that's the last question. Yeah, that video you can find. I think you can search by Islamophobia for Dummies. Thank you very much.
Make sure that you have signed the yellow sheet on the back by the door.